So today we're kicking off our exploration into the source material with a pretty wild cold case from the 16th century. We are digging into a stack of Inquisition records from 1511 to 1513.
Right, from Ciudad Real.
Exactly. And our mission here is to figure out how this one, kind of disagreeable neighbor named Maria Gonzalez became the absolute center of a massive heresy hunt.
It's a fascinating case.
It really is. I mean, imagine you're at home on a Friday night, right? You light a few candles, you've cleaned the house up, maybe you're prepping a nice dinner for the family. To us, that's just a cozy weekend.
Yeah, completely normal.
But in 1511, Spain, if your neighbor caught a glimpse of those candles through your window, it was effectively a death warrant.
It sounds extreme, I know, but for conversos, Jewish people who had been forced to convert to Catholicism, the home was actually the most dangerous place to be.
Because they were constantly being watched.
Exactly. The Spanish Inquisition wasn't just out there hunting for secret synagogues. They were really looking for networks, and specifically for Judaizing.
Judaizing.
Right. That was their term for anyone who was still practicing Jewish rituals under the guise of being Catholic.
Okay, but wait, help me understand how the Inquisition turns like a dinner recipe into a crime. Because the records for Maria show she was accused of koshering her meat.
Yeah, the specific prep matters here.
Right, specifically removing the fat and the sinews. I mean, why does the state care about how she trims a steak?
Well, because in Jewish law, or halakha, those specific parts of the animal are forbidden. So by removing them, Maria wasn't just being a picky eater.
She was sending a message.
Right, she was signaling that she still followed the old laws. And the exact same thing went for her laundry, actually.
Wait, laundry.
Yeah. If you put on clean clothes on a Saturday, you are honoring the Sabbath. So in the eyes of the Inquisition, a fresh shirt was literally a rejection of Christ.
Wow. It's like your neighborhood HOA suddenly has the power to burn you at the stake.
It's a good way to put it, honestly.
It makes these domestic rituals seem like, I don't know, a secret code that neighbors were just desperate to crack. Like every kitchen is a potential crime scene.
And Maria wasn't exactly making friends in her neighborhood either.
No, she really wasn't. The records actually describe her as a disagreeable drunkard. And there's that one shocking incident where she allegedly grabbed a religious image of the Virgin Mary, chucked it into a sewer, and then spat on it.
Yeah, which is where the why of it all gets really complicated.
Right, like why go that far?
Well, you have to ask, was she a secret, devout practitioner, or just someone who deeply hated the new system that forced her to convert? That act of defiance moved her from just a suspicious neighbor to an actual enemy of the state.
Because it's so public.
Exactly. The prosecutor, Martin Jimenez, used that sewer incident to prove she didn't just quietly miss her heritage. She actively despised her new faith.
Okay, but look at her strategy when the first trial actually hits in 1511. She doesn't just sit there and deny everything. She actually confesses.
He does.
But then she hands over this massive long list of other names, her neighbors, her family. You called this a strategy earlier, but isn't it more likely she was just completely terrified?
I mean, it's highly likely it was both. By confessing and naming a whole network, she made herself useful.
Right.
The Inquisition thrived on these networks. They wanted to pull the thread and see the whole tapestry, you know? So if she cooperated, she might get mercy.
And her defense even tried to make the prosecution witness names public during this, right? Which was like a direct challenge to the Inquisition's core rule of total secrecy.
It was a huge legal stir. But her honesty, or her naming of names, was really just a survival tactic. And initially, it actually worked. She was sentenced to life in prison rather than death.
But then the whole thing just completely implodes in 1513.
It really does.
The prosecutor reopens the case because he thinks she's lying, and they put her on the ladder, which is this awful rack that stretches the body, and they use water torture.
Very brutal methods.
Yeah, and that's when the truth, or at least a totally different kind of truth, comes out.
Right. Under the threat of torture, she admits she completely perjured herself. She made up the names.
Wait, she just made them up.
Yeah. She didn't name them because they were secret Jews. She named them because of unresolved deaths, petty insults, or even just pure envy over the clothes they wore.
Oh, wow. That's chilling. The massive machinery of the state holy war was basically being used to settle backyard grudges.
Exactly.
But here's what bothers me about all this. Can we actually believe any of the testimony in these records if it was all fueled by local gossip and, you know, these fantastic behaviors?
It's a huge problem for historians, definitely.
And if she retracted her confession under torture, the church technically forgave her then, right?
Well, not quite. Because she admitted her first confession was a lie, they labeled her a fictitious penitent.
Oh, I see.
And the church had a rule they wouldn't technically kill you themselves. Instead, they would relax you to the secular arm.
Which is just a massive legal loophole.
Total loophole. They hand you over to the civil government to be executed so the church can say, hey, we didn't spill any blood.
Man, what a brutal end for Maria and her mother, Beatrice. They were both burnt at the stake.
They were, yeah.
But before we wrap this exploration up, there's one tiny detail in these 500-year-old records that feels almost like a glitch in the Matrix to me.
Oh, the Book of Physics.
Yes. The witnesses mentioned that the men in the neighborhood would gather on Saturdays to read a book they called Physics, and they claimed it was just for medicine recipes.
Which is the perfect cover story. I mean, in 1513, who's going to argue with a science book?
Exactly. But if they were specifically gathering on the Sabbath to read it, you've got to wonder, was it really a science book used for medicine? Or was physics just the 16th century version of an encrypted file for a forbidden prayer book?
It makes you wonder what else they were hiding.
Right. What other secrets are still buried in plain sight in these records that we're just not smart enough to decode yet? Just something for everyone to think about next time you're doing something as simple as changing your shirt on a Saturday. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.